Okay, this is sound roll number 51 for Fight in the Fields of Paradigm production. We have a minus 8 dB reference tone to follow on the modulo number, which equals 0 VU. Okay, we're continuing the interview with Sabino Lopez, and we'll be starting now with camera 106. Our next take will be take 7.
You're to the right, left, and right.
Speed.
Rolling. Sabino Lopez, roll 106, 51, take 7.
Como ustedes trabajaban aquí en, el, en la legumbre y la lechuga en cuadrilla, ¿eso le ayudó cuando fue a organizar?
Definitivamente sí, porque nosotros teníamos el contacto con la gente, nos conocíamos, nuestra gente conocía a la gente misma, conocía el trabajo, conocía los problemas, conocíamos toda la vida nuestra del campo. Es una cosa que nos identifica a todos, porque vas tú y hablas con el otro, ya sabes, conoces el trabajo, sabes cuáles son los problemas similares que cada trabajador tiene. Entonces, cuando nosotros llegamos a hablar con los trabajadores al campo, pues y la oportunidad que teníamos como trabaja por cuadrillas, pues ibas y agarras una cuadrilla de 30, 40, 50 trabajadores juntos. En la hora del break ahí podías hablar, podías dirigirte con ellos, invitarlos que se unan al movimiento y empezar el contacto para organizarse.
Okay. Ahora, fueron cambiando las cosas ya como nos platicó en los 80s. Uh-huh. ¿Usted cree que fue una cosa, un error que hizo César cuando cambió la dirección del movimiento?
Pues yo no sé si yo soy la persona que tenga que decir que hizo un error, pero creo que como estrategia, como táctica para empujar el movimiento campesino, lo que yo puedo mirar es que no dio los resultados que se esperaron, yo creo. Creo que tal vez hizo un buen plan, pero tal vez no se lograron los resultados que esperaban. Y tal vez la táctica, la estrategia no fue la mejor. Y de hecho, pues, tenemos muy poca membresía en la Unión de Campesinos. Pocos contratos de verdura, yo no, que yo sepa. Entonces creo que no fue la mejor estrategia. Pero también hay que recordar que también las estrategias de las compañías, de los rancheros también fueron salirse de la unión y desaparecerse, cambiar de nombre. Hubo muchas razones, entonces creo que fue un tipo de varias razones por qué pasó eso, incluyendo también las leyes, que el cambio de gobierno que vino en ese tiempo de demócrata a republicano, que también fue otra parte que afectó en parte también el movimiento. Y creo que son varios factores que incluyen esa parte.
Y ahora, ya que han pasado algunos años que usted todavía sigue aquí en Salinas, uh-huh, y que vea como las condiciones de los trabajadores, uh-huh, ¿hay necesidad de una unión en este día?
Siempre hay necesidad de uniones. Creo que la unión es la vida del trabajador para mí. Creo que donde quiera que haya trabajadores se necesita una unión. Necesitamos estar unidos, necesitamos estar juntos para poder cambiar la vida de nosotros. Y siempre se necesitan líderes o personas que representen esos movimientos, donde quiera que estemos.
¿Y cómo ven las condiciones aquí en Salinas en comparación a los 60s o 70s? ¿Mejor, peor, igual? ¿Cómo lo ve?
Pues, ahorita la experiencia que yo tengo con las personas que yo trabajo, que yo ayudo, que yo organizo también en ese trabajo. De veras es una cosa muy triste, porque personas sienten que han regresado 10, 15 años para atrás. Muchos trabajadores sienten que eso ha cambiado, ha regresado para atrás a los tiempos antes de la unión. Que inclusive familias sienten que están pagando doble el haber pasado por esa etapa. Ahora se sienten como castigados, como relegados después de ese movimiento, porque creen que se ha tomado revancha contra nosotros por lo que hicimos, tal vez, y entonces creen que otra vez se está tomando venganza del trabajador, porque principalmente las personas que llegan a cierta edad ya no las quieren en un trabajo. No están mayores, no están muy adultos, pero sin embargo prefieren a un joven que llega queriendo trabajar aunque no sepa el trabajo que una persona con experiencia que tiene cierta edad. Entonces, varios trabajadores yo me los encuentro que yo conozco, que son buenos trabajadores, pero que ya no les dan trabajo, están ahí solamente esperando, van a pedir trabajo, no les dan. Y miran a un joven, una jovencita, los prefieren a ellos. Y personas con mucha experiencia que están en su plena edad de madurez, de trabajar fuerte y todo, prefieren una persona que está llegando con toda la energía, con su juventud. Entonces, hay mucho tipo de abuso. Yo oigo reportes de personas, de señoras que se quejan de los abusos de mayordomos sin escrúpulos que tratan de abusar de ellas a cambio del trabajo. Y esa es una queja que se oye donde quiera, y creen muchas personas que esto se ha regresado a los tiempos para atrás y aún con un poco más de revanchismo.
Pero usted, como organizador, como si continúa de organizando a la gente, ¿qué es lo que está haciendo para hacer esos cambios?
Pues yo lo que estoy haciendo es, creo que lo que hizo la Unión de Campesinos antes de que existiera ninguna ley que estableciera un sistema de derechos para los trabajadores. Creo que lo que yo hago es ir y a la antigüita y hablar con la gente y envolverlos en lo que yo estoy haciendo, explicarles, educarlos, cómo defenderse, cómo unirse, cómo pelear por sus derechos, también darles seguridad, darles confianza y enseñarlos, y no solamente enseñarlos y decirles, sino también hacerlo y probarlo también y hacer cambios y por la experiencia misma, por la práctica misma. Y afortunadamente eso es una de las maneras que mi trabajo, yo todavía estoy haciendo eso, voy para atrás con la gente, y la gente siempre tiene miedo, la gente siempre tiene desconfianza, la gente siempre tiene miedo de que va a perder algo. Y principalmente en mi trabajo, el miedo de ellos es que pueden perder su casa. Y si no tienen casa para su familia, ¿qué van a hacer? ¿Dónde van a estar? Y entonces ellos tienen un riesgo también lo que van a hacer, pero con educación, con dirección y con buena representación, las familias dan el paso. Siempre hay personas listas para dar el paso. Y si hay una persona lista para dar el paso, yo ya tengo éxito, porque con esa persona tengo de ejemplo para que los demás sigan a los demás. Y eso siempre, porque unos son muy cautelosos, no dan el paso hasta ver que alguien lo hizo y que de veras se puede hacer cambios. Y creo que siempre hay que estar haciendo el intento, siempre hay que estar retando, siempre hay que estar yendo adelante para enseñar que sí se puede y se pueden cambiar las cosas cuando uno quiere. Y yo les digo, si una persona me apoya, si una persona quiere hacer algo, con esa persona lo podemos hacer. Los demás van a venir enseguida.
Jerry Cohen también.
Okay, that was take 7.
Estaba hablando con Fred también.
Sí. Yeah.
Que mientras siempre hay alguien que.
That's very thrilling.
Sí.
Rolling? To your right, right?
Okay. Okay, and this is take 8. Marker.
Para usted, ¿quién fue César y qué representó?
Para mí, César fue la persona que nos dio la esperanza a muchos trabajadores, que nos dio la fe, que nos dio la inspiración para hablar por nosotros mismos, que nos dio la oportunidad de salir adelante para luchar por nuestra dignidad. Creo que esa fue la persona que yo miré cuando supe que él estaba representando a la Unión de Campesinos. Sin conocerlo, supe que era una persona que estaba trayéndonos esperanza a nosotros los campesinos, y creo que esa es la persona como yo lo miré.
¿Y qué sintió usted cuando vio que había muerto?
Pues cuando supe que él murió, creo que fue una sorpresa de incredulidad. Creo que no creía que había muerto, pero entonces yo, para mí fue como una, dije, no puede ser. Cuando lo oí, dije, no puede ser eso. Y creo que lo que pensé también, que no sé, con la muerte de él se cerró un capítulo de la historia del movimiento campesino, un capítulo de su nacimiento, del movimiento, y un capítulo de un líder que hizo todo lo que pudo para adelantarnos, pero como tal, pues todo que que empieza tiene un fin. Cada uno de nosotros también vamos a terminar algún día. Total, eso es algo que no podemos evitar. Y, creo tristeza y por último, pues fui a la marcha de su despedida en Deleno. Este que más que lo que me recordó cuando fui fue mirar los miles y miles de trabajadores o gentes que fueron ahí en su marcha. Me hizo recordar mucho las marchas tremendas, inmensas que se organizaban cuando estábamos organizándonos en apoyo de los campesinos. Y creo que esa última despedida que yo miré, para mí me recordó los grandes tiempos de cuando la gente era tan fuerte, tan unida, tan grande. Y para mí que fue como la reflexión del tiempo, de los, no sé, la gente estaba ahí como en los grandes tiempos, pero no para una razón de estar organizando, para estar luchando, pero por la razón de que él se estaba despidiendo, pero ahí estaba toda esa gente que ha sido parte de la historia, y ahí se encontraron personas mayores, personas jóvenes, más gente mayor se miraba que fueron los que estaban, y creo que todas las personas que fueron tocados por el movimiento, que en alguna forma u otra fueron parte, que participaron, estaban ahí, y era bonito mirar tanta gente, pero al mismo tiempo era un poco triste porque la... No sé, también tal vez era un principio, porque tanta gente tal vez eso iba a regresar para atrás con una inspiración nueva de volver a las raíces y organizar al campesino. Y tal vez esa fue mi esperanza, que tal vez eso sea otra vez el inicio, otra vez de un movimiento, con gente con compromiso con la causa.
Okay, that was take eight, and that should be the end of camera 106.
¿Qué es esto? ¿Qué es esto? ¿Qué está pasando?
Room time for the interview with Sabino Lopez.
Quiet, please.
And room time for the interview. And that's also the end of the interview with Sabino Lopez.
Ojalá que no la hayamos casado, que vamos con la otra
cita. Okay, this is... still the 31st of August, and we're about to do the interview with Pete Maturino. We'll be starting camera 107. Our next take will be take one. That's what's next.
This is, what's your first name?
Pete
Maturino, take one. Marker.
Pete, you were with the Teamsters from 72 to about 77. Could you kind of describe the ambience at that time from your point of view of what was going on with organizing and Salinas?
Basically, in 1970 is when the Teamsters actually came into the Valley. Then they left in 71. At that time, of course, I was out there just working as a student in ag, cutting broccoli, loading celery, loading lettuce. And then back in 1970 is when also the United Farm Workers came in. And I was working at Sun Harvester. In those days, it was Interharvest. And there was basically no unions anywhere here in the Valley. The UFW came in and said, do you guys need a union? And would you like holiday pay? Would you like vacation pay and health and welfare? And I said, sure. You know, and of course, I was only 17, 18 years old at the time. But we did. We all walked out of the Valley here, including all 3,500 workers at Interharvest. And that was the first contract here under the United Farm Workers. And then in 72, the Teamsters, I was out there cutting broccoli, and the Teamsters offered me a job. And I said, sure. And at the time, I didn't really know what kind of job I was going to be doing, because I've never really thought about organizing or talking to people or representing people, especially here in the Valley. I knew, and I worked for almost every employer here, Merrill Farms, Hardin, Salinas Farmers Co-op, all the old companies. And the unions basically didn't exist until 73, when all the contracts started coming in with the Teamsters Union, and then the contracts with the United Farm Workers. So that's when the kind of like the conflict started happening between the United Farm Workers and the Teamsters Union. It was 73, 74, 75.
What was the feeling around here? You had, you know, two unions vying for the same workers, or what was going on?
There was a feeling of belonging, either to the United Farm Workers or to the Teamsters Union. There was a division, of course. Everybody within the Teamsters Union thought the Teamsters were the greatest. the members from the United Farm Workers thought they were the best. And there was kind of like a competitive feeling. The United Farm Workers would get 10 cents, 15 cents in their contract increase. So the Teamsters would shoot for the same thing. So what we saw was an increase in wages and benefits and working conditions. There was no existence of, let's say, CRLA and those kind of agencies because there wasn't any need for those kind of agencies. And the contract covered everything from the toilets and facilities in the fields to the wages and working conditions and benefits. So there wasn't really any need for workers to go anywhere except to rely on the union contracts, whether it be the UFW or the Teamsters Union.
So you feel that the competition between the unions was a good thing, but obviously Caesar didn't feel that way.
Well, I think the competition was healthy because it gave the workers what we were looking for, both the United Farm Workers and ourselves. Our goal was to give workers good working conditions, the best wages possible. And I think by doing what we did back in the 70s, 74, 75, being competitive with each other, I think it helped the worker. But I guess the United Farm Workers through Caesar felt in 1977 that only one union belonged in the field. And so he signed a contract with the Teamsters Union at the time. And of course, we down here at the local level didn't and were not aware of the signing of the contract until after the document was signed, that the Teamsters Union had signed a contract saying that they were going to leave the fields.
What effect did the signing of that contract have?
I think the signing of the so-called Peace Pact Agreement was the most devastating thing that ever happened in farm labor. Because the end results were, it basically was and is where we're at now. That we went from representing 70% to 80% of farm labor as we knew it then in California between both unions to representing about 15 to 20% among three or four unions that we have now.
So what was behind signing of this peace pact? From your point of view,
I wasn't privy to none of the conversations and things, but I would have to say now that I look back at it and talking to Marshall Gans and talking to Jerry Cohen and those kind of people is that I think they took a gamble and I think they lost. The gamble was the Teamsters are out of the way in 77. That leaves the farm workers only one choice. That would be the United Farm Workers or no union. The problem with that is the farm workers as a whole decided no union. And it's reflected, let's say, in the grape industry where the United Farm Workers got started. There's no union whatsoever. And through the years, the UFW lost a lot of their contracts. Well, the Teamsters, well, they walked away. They walked away from 80,000 members. They walked away from 220 contracts. And it was devastating.
Why would the Teamsters walk away from 80,000 contracts?
I think
8,000 members.
Yeah, I think the decision was beneficial for both parties. At the time, the thought was the United Farm Workers, the Teamsters are out. We don't have to compete with them. Farm workers have to choose us over the non-union. As far as the Teamsters were concerned, they got rid of at that time, and I feel now that they got rid of the Hispanic or the Mexican end of the Teamster organizers. Farm workers, and I don't think they really wanted to represent farm workers at that time. And they saw us, I think, as a threat because we were the largest local. And the way the structure is within the Teamsters Union is that you have local autonomy. And every other local in the Teamsters Union has a jurisdiction of around maybe one or two counties within that state. Our jurisdiction in farm labor was 13 western states. There's basically no jurisdiction. It was just the Western Conference of Teamsters. And we had 80,000 members versus your average Teamster local at around 6,000 members or 3,000 members. And it gives you a lot of delegate vote in the conventions. It gives you a lot of power that you can delegate.
So briefly, what was going on between in the organization with all these Mexican members here?
We didn't see it at the time because I was really young. I was only 22 years old, 21. But what was happening is that we were getting the experience, we were getting the exposure, we were getting trained by the union itself and the workforce, basically to move up in the ranks. And I think they saw it as a threat at that time.
When this peace pact was signed and the Teamsters left, organizing, left the fields. What was your reaction? What happened to you?
Our initial reaction, not only myself, but the other board members that were on the executive board at the time, was disgust, we were angry. So what we decided to do was form other unions, independent unions, like this one here, the Independent Union of Ag Workers, the International Union in Santa Maria, Campesinos Independientes in Yuma, Arizona, and we tried to spread it out. And history will show you, and the people that were in charge of these unions were all ex-Teamster business agents. And basically, we wanted to give the people out there, farm workers, another choice. If it wasn't the Teamsters Union, then it would be one of these other independent unions.
So what's the situation now in Salinas? I don't think the Teamsters have few of any contracts. The UFW has few of any contracts. I mean, what's the situation for people working in agriculture in Salinas?
In Salinas itself, the UFW does not have any lettuce contracts. Now, mind you, that they do have certifications. They are certified under DeRigo Brothers, which is a large corporation here in Salinas, lettuce company. Bruce Church, you know, it's another large company. For whatever reasons they may have, they have not negotiated a contract with these companies in 14, 15 years. And I know that they're trying to do some organizing now within here in Salinas, same as we are and same as the Teamsters Union. The Teamsters themselves only have Bud of California. They have Yoder Brothers, which was an old contract. It's ag, considered ag. And they have a small farm here out of Soledad, which is tractor drivers and irrigators. But other than that, it's Bud of California. And now it's Dole, and it's about 3,500 workers. But that's been with the Teamsters since 1961. But other than that, that's the only thing we have.
What about conditions?
The conditions as farm workers as a whole have deteriorated to the point of maybe the late 60s, early 70s, when the non-union basically existed. The Bracero days when there was labor contracted forces. And I think the Braceros had more benefits then than our people do now. The Braceros at least were guaranteed employment for 1 year, were guaranteed medical, were guaranteed housing, meals, and the people are not now.
What was going on, do you think, in your opinion, from where you stand, with Caesar, when he walks in and he says, we're the only people, we're the only union who should represent farm workers? What was all that about?
I think it started that way, and I, you know, it was the
We need a context here. We know where we're talking here.
In the 60s, I guess it started that way, with the Filipinos starting the labor movement and farm labor, getting together with the United Farm Workers and forming UFWOC. And I think it started with Caesar being the only union around to represent farm workers. And I do agree with that the Teamsters Union, when they came in 70 and 73, 72, were signing contracts with the employers. Not just signing them, but we would go out to the fields and sign people up. And if we had the majority, we would tell the employer, we have the majority of your people. There was no law. So the employer would sign a contract with us. But the way I saw that, the UFW saw it as sweetheart contracts. This is big in the 1970s, early. We saw it as a benefit to the people. There were people that didn't have any representation. The UFW didn't pick them up in the 70s, early 70s. They basically came in, signed up Interharvest, and they left. Yeah.
Okay, that's the end of camera roll 107 and take one, and it's the end of the sound roll. Goodbye. Okay, this is sound roll number 52 for Fight in the Fields of Paratime Production. We have a minus 8 to be reference tone to follow in the modulometer, which equals 0 VU. Okay, we're continuing the interview with Pete Maturino. We're starting camera roll 108. Our next take is take 2.
Sorry to stop, huh?
Okay, this is take 2. Marker.
Yeah, we were talking about Caesar and UFW being the only game in town. Where'd that come from? What was going on there?
I think like any other union, you know, you wanna organize everything, and you wanna represent the whole industry, whether it be SEIU in the service industry, whether it be United Farm Workers in the ag industry. And I think that's the way it started. When they combined forces in the early 60s with the Filipinos, I think that was the whole intent. And I don't think there was any other union at the time anyway interested in organizing farm labor. Of course, the Teamsters had Bud of California, but that was back since 1961. But there wasn't any other union. And I think they got to the point where they had up to 100,000 members, and they thought they could control or organize everything there was to organize under farm labor. And they wanted to do that. So they preached una sola union, one union only. And then whoever called in the Teamsters Union, or for whatever reason, whether it was the growers, whoever, I don't think anybody counted on that the Teamsters were going to get an organizing group like ourselves. We had about 80 business agents, and we were servicing the contracts. We were negotiating contracts. We were trained. We were doing a job, and I don't think anybody counted on that. And that's one of the reasons I think that the law was enacted, because the Teamsters were just signing too many contracts.
What law are you referring to, though?
The Agricultural Labor Relations Act that was enacted in 75. Basically, what the law says, we're going to give the workers a right to choose now. If they want to be represented by the Teamsters Union, no union, or the United Farm Workers. And at the time, when the elections took place, the thought wasn't whether I want a union or not, it's which union I want. And I think, again, the United Farm Workers, whoever it was at the time that was there, miscalculated. And they thought that by having the law, that the workers automatically, being farm workers, and that the history behind the UFW would automatically organize all farm labor, and all workers were going to vote for the UFW. The problem is that it didn't turn out that way. In 75, the Teamsters were winning a lot of elections. As a matter of fact, a majority of elections in San Joaquin Valley were won by the Teamsters Union.
Yeah, there are allegations of sweetheart deals, of people coming in and of the Teamsters coming in and signing up workers, or saying these workers are going with the union without the workers even voting on it. What was going on there?
Probably two. And it's probably two. I mean, I was there. I was there. I mean, in 1973, we were allowed access. There was no law in effect. The Teamsters Union were allowed access into the fields of the growers. And they said, talk to our people, and if they want a union, then we'll sign a contract. I mean, it wasn't the Teamsters going into a grower's company office and saying, here, sign a contract. It was going out to the workers and having them sign union cards first and explaining to them what it meant. What would you get for signing a union card? Not automatically, you'd get a 60% increase in wages. You would get holidays, you get vacation, you get medical. Who's not going to sign a union card? And then we get those cards and we give them to the grower in front of a neutral party, and then we compare the signatures to the worker signatures, and the grower said, okay, you have the majority of my people signed up. Where's the contract? And we signed a master agreement. You know, like the United Farm Workers had a master agreement, we had a master agreement. And then the growers just started signing under that master agreement after we signed their people up.
So how do you respond to the farm workers saying, oh yeah, the reason that we're losing ground is because Teamsters came in and signed sweetheart deals with the growers? I mean, how do you respond to that?
They can call it whatever name they want to call it. All I know is that people benefit by signing a contract with the Teamsters Union. You can call it sweetheart, you can call it anything you want. Did the workers benefit from the signing of the contracts between the Teamsters and the growers at the time? You know, that's the question. If you want to call it a sweetheart contract, call it a sweetheart contract. And that's fine with me. All I know is that we signed up to people first, and then we signed the contract with the employer. Not all the employers wanted to sign up. Not all the people wanted to sign up. But if we got the majority, then we signed the contract. Then in 75, when the law was enacted, because supposedly these charges that too many sweetheart contracts were being signed by the Teamsters and the growers, the UFW thought by entering into the law, then the workers would have a chance to decide, really, by vote, by secret ballot, which union they wanted. The problem is, by 1977, the Teamsters still had 80,000 members. This is 2 years after the law. So something went wrong there, as far as the UFW was concerned. So they have to go back to the drawing board and think of something else. And I think what came out of it was the peace pact, basically saying, hey, Teamsters, you're going to get out of the fields. And they just walked away from 80,000 members.
So you think that was a mistake?
That was the, like I say, it was the worst mistake that anybody could have done. You know, the Teamsters really didn't care at the time. The head of the Teamsters union then, the United Farm Workers, all their thought was eliminating the competition. But I think when you eliminated the competition, you eliminated the representation for 80,000 farm workers. And there is no way you were going to pick up 80,000 farm workers. The employers got smart enough where they told the workers, you don't need a union. Here the Teamsters walk out on you. This is what unions are all about. The UFW, well, you know what they're all about. So what we'll do is we'll keep the same benefits, same wages, same everything, as if there were a union here. And the growers were smart enough that they continued to do that for the following 3 or 4 or 5 years, until slowly but surely they started bringing down the wages, they started bringing in labor contractors, they started changing the whole structure of the ag industry.
Now, as you see, the ag industry changed, the structure changed, labor contractors came in, and there's pretty much seen in the last number of years, in the last 10 or 15 years, it's kind of the bad guys. I mean, what is the role of the labor contractors?
Well, they're the bad guy because just like this grower here recently that got organized by the UFW and the strawberries. It's one guy that gives the rest of the industry a bad name. There's some good labor contractors, there's some bad labor contractors. It's like in everything else, in every other industry. But contractors are created by the employers. The Nunes Company for many years employed their own people. But the wages got so high at $7.45, minimum wage, $7.45, you know, in 1987, that they said they had enough. So they terminated all their employees. And the employees didn't even have a chance to bring in a union. It was just from one day to the next. And the following year, all 1,500 people of the Nunes Company in 1987 were working under a labor contractor. So the employers create the labor contractor. As a matter of fact, there's employers now, Merrill, Nunes, and all these companies, they hire 4 or 5 labor contractors. So the labor contractors can compete against each other. And if they compete against each other as to who's going to do it cheaper, the one who is affected by it are the workers themselves, because they lose on wages, benefits, working conditions. And then the threat of loss of job is the biggest one. That's one of the main reasons you go talk to a worker now and he says, I don't want to make any problems. I just want a job. At $5.50, $5, $4 an hour, I just want a job.
So now you're working, you have your own union, independent union. What's changed? What's different now?
The difference is that we maintain or try to maintain the best wages possible. And right now it's $7 an hour within the ag industry and the lettuce industry. I have some contracts at $6.50, $6 an hour. But most of my contracts are over $7 an hour. But from 1985 to 1990, we had to stay at $7 an hour. We could not get any wage increases out of our employers here at the Independent Union. Just recently we renewed our contracts, and we got 10 cents, 15 cent increases for the next 3 years. So we're going to be going up to 7.30, 7.40, 7.45. But we're slowly making some movement forward. And that's because the employers that I have under contract, our employers are saying, we want to pay decent wages, but we don't want to be out of business also. And that's not my object, is to put this employer out of business.
Now, there's, what, 750,000 agricultural workers in California, yet it seemed like the Teamsters and the UFW were always fighting over a fraction of them. What was going on there?
And you're right, and we're always talking about it here within ourselves in the union as to there's so many thousands of workers out there that are not unionized, and then you have the Teamsters union with more money, of course, in this union, a lot more money, the United Farm Workers, a lot more money, a lot more experience, offices, and I got 28 offices, I think they boasted they had. Why not go out there and organize the unorganized? You know, why try to organize something that I have or something that we're both trying to organize? Why not help each other? But we don't do that. And why, I don't know. We don't have the communication. And I think the people that end up losing again, our farm workers in general, farm workers in San Joaquin Valley, Imperial Valley, Yuma, Arizona, those are the people that need organizing, and yet nobody's out there doing it.
In the late 70s, or let's say early,
Okay, that was take two. Now going to take three and starting camera roll 109. That was the end of camera roll 108.
Okay, this is take three. Marker.
Now, Pete, in the late 70s and early 80s, the Teamsters were out of the picture and the UFW seemed to stop organizing. I mean, what was going on there?
As far as the UFW is concerned, after the peace pact, I think they slacked off. I think they felt the workers were going to come to them instead of them going to the workers, since there was nobody to compete with but the grower himself. And they felt the grower basically wasn't smart enough to convince the workers to stay or go no union instead of staying union by the Teamsters leaving. And I think they were wrong. They should have gone just right out there, right after the peace pact. As a matter of fact, I think part of the peace pact should have been that the... That all those internal problems can always be settled.
Okay, that was take three. Going to take four.
The internal problems you give it.
Okay.
That big purge.
Okay, take four, marker.
Now, what happened in the 80s with Teamsters walking out and you was the only game in town? What's going on? There was no organizing.
There wasn't any organizing because I still think that the United Farm Workers felt that the farm workers were going to come out in droves and sign up because they had just barely been with the Teamsters Union. They knew what a new union contract was. They knew that without the union contract, there would be problems. And I think they counted on that. And I think they made a mistake. I think they should have gone out right away, right after the peace pact, and talked to these people. And as a matter of fact, I think it would have been better as part of the peace pact. And it would have been hard, but I think it would have been better to try to get some kind of deal going with the ex-Teamster organizers, to go out with the UFW organizers and talk to the workers about going into the UFW, you know. But none of that happened. And I think they didn't count that the employer or the grower had enough sense to talk to the workers and convince them to stay non-union. But it happened. They stayed non-union. And then the UFW got caught up in the great boycott and other things, and then they had their internal problems, and so they had to deal with that. So there was a lot of situations that I think stopped them from actually going out there and grassroots organizing like they were doing. Everything was fine until up to that point of the peace pact.
You talked a little bit about organizing before. I'd like to get into that a little bit more. I mean, what is the most important role of a union and of an agricultural union?
Well, I always go back to our bylaws that says that we're supposed to use supposedly all the monies that come into this union from dues, initiations, and things like that for the union, for the betterment of the union. And to me, that means organizing. Because the stronger the union is, the more membership it has, the more clout you have when you organize and when you negotiate a union contract. If you're a small union like this is, you try to negotiate the best thing you can for the workers without going on to a strike or things like that, because it's a small union. Now, I think we're in a position here with this small union that the UFW was in the 60s. Now, they're the Teamsters Union, and we're the UFW. Because they are the bigger union. They've been around 20-some years. They have millions of dollars. They're not this poor little union that used to be in the 60s. They're very organized. They have a direct mail through the nation. They know what organizations to hit for grants, donations. They still get quite a bit of funds. So all these monies are not being funneled for organizing purposes. There is a lot of it going on now with Artie Rodriguez taking over the union. There's been some changes, from what I understand, within the structure of the union. And you can tell. You can tell that they want to make the appearance at different places throughout the state of California. Dolores Huerta is more active than she was for quite a few years. I think they're trying to make a change. I think they're trying to organize. But it's different. The workforce is different than the 60s and the 70s. The workforce has gone into other industries, whether it's because of IRCA or whatever reason, they've gone into the restaurant, hotel, construction, anything but farm workers. And so we've had a big change in farm labor. We have people that have only been here 10 years or 9 years, and that makes a difference. They don't know what the struggles were from the 60s and the 70s. All they know that right now I'm getting $4.50 an hour. And so, and then right now we have, like here in Salinas, we have 20 or 30% more farm workers than what the industry needs. So anytime there's an abundance of workers, the grower or the labor contractor gets to choose and gets to say, well, I'm only going to pay you $5, and if you don't like it, go somewhere else. So the worker takes it because he knows that jobs are few right now.
Okay. Now, one of the major differences between the Teamsters and the UFW was this issue of the hiring hall. Why wouldn't the Teamsters use it? Why wouldn't they use the hiring?
I think the structure of the Teamsters has had a hiring hall. The truck drivers had always had a hiring hall here in Salinas. But I don't think they wanted to deal with it because you were talking, 1,000 truck drivers versus 30,000 farm workers. And I don't think they were ready to deal with it. The United Farm Workers had a hiring hall. But even in the hiring hall in the UFW, there were some problems because they got so big that I don't think they had any really control over what was going on within the hiring halls. And I think that was one of the things that backfired at the time in the late 60s and or late 70s. One of the things that backfired on the UFW was the hiring hall. I think the workers had a lot of complaints about the hiring hall. And I think they eventually got rid of it. And there's some contracts that they still have that have a hiring hall. And there is a benefit to the hiring hall. Because me, I would love to have a hiring hall. But to get our employers to agree with that, something else. Because there's a lot of workers out there that we can try to get in to work that are ex-members of this union. And those are the ones that you want to give employment to. The people that are out there that don't have a job that are your ex-members.
Looking back now, what do you think was, besides the Peace Pact, what was the single greatest strategic error that the UFW made that put them where they are now?
I think one of the biggest mistakes, I think, was that they were too confident that the workers would automatically choose the UFW over non-union. And I think they misjudged the growers and the grower industry, and all the non-union consultants that popped up after the Teamsters left. And I think they just misjudged it. I think that's why they had a hard time afterwards trying to get back into the game. And I think they concentrated more on the boycott, trying to get a master agreement in the grape industry, and it didn't work. They went 8 to 10 years in the boycott, and nothing happened. The grape industry has flourished, and it's selling more grapes than it ever has. I think the boycotts are good, and they're good at boycotting. But I think they have to choose an employer at a time and go after them, and they will take them under. But when you take on a whole industry, that's different. When you tell all of America you have to boycott all grapes, it's very difficult because people are working out there. You're telling them boycott these grapes without even going out to talk to the people and see if they want you to boycott those grapes. So if you go out there and you organize a worker and VB's Zinanovich out of Delano, and he doesn't want to sign a contract with you, and then take him under. Take him with a boycott, and it'll work.
Okay. That should do it. Anything else I should have said?
Okay, that was take four.
Not really. Just their internal stuff, but I don't.
And room tone. It's the end of the room tone for Pete Maturino, mostly with Vicente tapping his fingers, actually. That was very loud.
Thanks, Pete.